Listen and stream the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matters.
Basis here. Good afternoon, folks. Of course, you're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor. Our numbers are 6273-223, 625-2257, and WhatsApp's only 306-1065, where she answers all your medical questions. And of course, you learn something new every day. Red yeast rice. Never heard about that in my life. Well, red yeast rice tablets. All right, Doc.
Definitely. We learn something every single day.
And that is beautiful. That is absolutely beautiful. All right, let's take a call. It's 6273-223. Hello, good afternoon.
Hey, Biz.
Yeah, man.
Good day, my brother, and to the doctor. Assalamu alaikum, Doc. And Ramadan Mubarak to you.
Ramadan Mubarak to everyone listening to us.
Thank you. Visited the doctor a couple of weeks ago, and doctor diagnosed me with high blood pressure. Prescribed me on a tablet, but take the tablet for a few days, and I had to go back to him because I was feeling very lightheaded during the course of the day while driving and thing. And then he take me off of the tablet and tell me come back in 2 weeks. What should I do? Testing my pressure, writing it down every day, and the both of them seems very high on for the past 2 weeks now, right? I have to go by him in the next couple of days. Is it worrying? Is it supposed to worry or what to do? Wait until I go back, carry the records that I take every day. Sometimes I take it twice.
Right.
And I'm always reading above average.
Can you give me an idea of what the value looks like?
Sometimes it goes to 160, 170, to 90, 100, you know, and things like that.
Okay. So, all right. Let's talk about it and tune in, right? First and foremost, I feel the stress and pressure in your voice. It's palpable. And yes, you're very correct. Stress can also worsen or exacerbate that blood pressure. Here's the good things you're doing. So I want to reassure you. One, you're concerned enough you went to the doctor. Two, you're on certain medications. Three, you're recording it every day. You're doing a pretty good job already. So give yourself that pat on the back. I think you're well on the way to getting it controlled. However, we have to give the blood pressure medications a little bit of chance to get equilibrated within the body, to get within the normal concentrations so that the blood pressure itself can come down. What I also suggest is let's also look at what are the foods you're eating. Believe it or not, there's so many hidden salts in a lot of the things that we eat. Over the weekend, I had sushi with my little one, and while I requested the low salt soy sauce, they still provided the normal soy sauce. And on instant, the exact moment I tasted it, I realized, too much salt. So we have to change our palate towards adjusting to a lower salt. And sometimes it may be hidden in a lot of the foods that we eat. So switch out some of the foods and eat more grilled, less seasoned. And that will also assist in bringing down the blood pressure. I am pretty certain once you continue on your medication, if you can also add a layer of exercise, believe me, just getting 15 minutes. If you can work your way up to 30 minutes, that's great. And if it's during this month of Ramadan and you're fasting during the day, let's not exercise during the day. We can exercise in the afternoon time. Once you've broken fast, say like 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, you can still do a little 10, 15 minutes. The exercise will also help to bring down that blood pressure. My end advice is stay consistent. Don't wean off the tracker. You're well on your way. I know and I feel when it hits 190 on 100, that is indeed very elevated. If you're feeling any sort of chest pains or if you're feeling dizzy, then return right to the doctor or to a health center, any sort of healthcare professional. But with the medications and all of that lifestyle advice, I am certain in about a month or two from now, you're going to call us back and you're going to tell us, Doc, I have my blood pressure under control. In my past, it's 19 years I've been a doctor. The amount of patients that I've seen with high blood pressures, and then after, it takes a little while, after a month or two, 3 months, sometimes even 4 or 5 months, they do get it under control. Stay consistent. Okay? Hope that helps.
But Doc, just for information, what is the correct amount of salt intake and one should have? And of course, it will depend on whether you have high blood pressure, low blood pressure. What should you look out for? What's a safe amount? Because you know we love salty things in Trinidad. Because we love our salt.
Every single thing that we are eating have a level of salt to it. Now, let me just pull that exact value up because I wouldn't want to give a wrong value. Salt for the day. Yeah. Now, different ages are there different recommendations for an amount of salt, right? Essentially, it is a small amount. It's a very minute. The general recommendations per day is about 1 teaspoon, okay? 2.3 grams. That's it. And for children, it's even lower than that. So when you think of just 1 teaspoon for your whole day, it's just 1 teaspoon. That's your dietary recommendation for the entire day.
Okay, 1 teaspoon. Not a tablespoon, not a pot spoon. 1 teaspoon. All right, let's get another call here. Once again, folks, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1, Sky 99.5, and Vibe City 105 FM. Feel free to message our other stations, and they will forward your messages to us. Hello, good afternoon. Oh, sorry, we lost that one. Let's check. Oh, here. Hello?
Yeah, good day, Bass, and good day to you, Doc. Doc, the dry throat and tongue syndrome, I have had no diabetes. My pressure is good. You know, and thing like that. Would it be something to do with your thyroid gland, the dry throat thing? Because, I was out. I just came back in, and I have a bottle of water. And I almost drink out the whole bottle because, the dry throat thing now. I don't know if you could explain anything about that, for me.
Definitely. So I'm glad that you already ruled out diabetes first. But here's some of the other general causes or the ones that we see more commonly in the clinic. Sometimes if a person has acid reflux or any sort of gut problems, that reflux of the acid comes up and it may feel like it's almost burning the throat. And that may lead to the dry throat. If someone has allergies and there is some level of either an atopic reaction or an infection with the tonsils, so like you may get a tonsillitis, all of those are some of the more common reasons where we see a dry throat. We also see a dry throat if one has sleep apnea. So during the course of the night, they may be snoring or there's some sort of obstruction. And then in the morning, they're waking up with this excessively dry throat, dry lips, everything. Hope that answers the question. You also asked about thyroid. Yes, hypothyroidism can present with that dry throat. So next steps is let's get you checked out. Hope that answers your question.
All right, let's get some questions here from our WhatsApp. Good day, Doc. Can you explain what is endometriosis and treatments, hysterectomy, or radiological uterine artery embolization?
Wow. Yeah, great question. So the endometriosis, we actually talked a little bit about endometriosis last week, and it was so relevant that we brought it back again into the paper. That endometriosis does indeed, it can be genetic in nature, and it's when there's this extra bit or retrograde reflux of the menstrual cycle, but back into the uterine cavity. Those mechanisms of treatment that you mentioned there are indeed what we would call one of the layers. We can either consider last stage, which is a hysterectomy, but even before hysterectomy, there's certain medications that can be utilized for the treatment of endometriosis. The uterine embolization is one that happens further on after the medication level. So have the conversation with your gynecologist. In this case, this conversation needs to be done with a specialist in women's health, because there may be the use of utilization of the oral contraceptive pill. There may be the combined pill. There may be even your contraceptive implant. So there's a host of medications that can be used, but this needs to be prescribed by a gynecologist. Hope this gives a little bit of a clarity to endometriosis.
Okay, here's another endometriosis question. Good day, Doc. I'm 45 years old and I have had endometriosis as far as I can remember. And as a result, never conceived. I recently had an ultrasound because my period has started playing tag. When I do have it, the pain is unbelievable and other times manageable. Right? The ultrasound revealed that I do have some very small fibroids and adenomyosis. The doctor,
adenomyosis,
yes. The doctor recommended that I take Depo-Provera injections to help. I am concerned because of what Dr. Google says about Depo-Provera. What should I do?
Okay, so let's stay away from Dr. Google first and foremost. What is prescribed there is the first line treatment, right? Anything that you're placed on, any hormonal medication, will have certain side effects. But that's why, like I just mentioned, you're seeing a gynecologist, someone who is specialized. The thing about endometriosis, and now you said it's also complicated by adenomyosis plus fibroids, is that you want to get a proper grip on this situation. Yes, Depo-Provera is one of the treatments. Continue it by the guidance of your healthcare professional for a certain period of time, and you can continue to monitor. And when I say monitor, get a little notebook, jot down the symptoms you're experiencing. What you said there about the pain, that is something that is unbelievable through their menstrual cycle, and they have this debilitating type pain. It's far to understand that this condition called endometriosis can be causing such pain. Yes, it can. And there are certain techniques you can, well, there are certain medications, first and foremost, the NSAIDs. You can use stronger NSAIDs, smooth muscle relaxant, or even engage in non-medical treatment. That may be some stretches. Yoga tends to help tremendously. Even meditation, even applying that warm water bath treatment or the rags, those warm rags onto the tummy. If you're in work, that might be a little bit difficult. The stretches certainly can help. But the pain, yes, it is a debilitating pain. What I would suggest is continue with the medication that's prescribed. Yes, there are other medications that can also be included, but I'm certain your healthcare professional is going layer by layer. The other steps may be surgical or invasive type steps, and I don't want you to feel overly overwhelmed about infertility. That is one of the serious complications, but you're on treatment. Infertility happens in the cases where there's absolutely no treatment or if it's severe endometriosis. Hope this answers your question. And what I will suggest is continue having conversations with other women who have had endometriosis. Instead of doing the Dr. Google, do a little search for endometriosis support group. Believe me, there are. And see what some other patients who are experiencing endometriosis also are sharing in terms of what is helping their pain management. Hope that answers your question.
All right, folks, 12:31 on time. Of course, our numbers here, 627-3223, 625-2257, and WhatsApp's only 306-1065. Once again, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor. Dr. Safiya Mohammed, heard on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangi 106.1, Vibe City 105 FM, and Sky 99.5. Call us up with all your questions. And the lady you just answered her question, she says, thank you so much, doctor. Another question here. Hi, doc. Let's go to the phone lines. Check this out here. Hello. Good afternoon.
Hello, good day. Good afternoon. Hey, doctor.
Hi, yes. Good afternoon.
Yes, doc. I'm having a little problem with my tips on my right hand, the fingers. The tips of my fingers are normally, about 2 weeks now, they start to get like numb, you know, feeling numb right through. So I want to know what could be.
Stay on the air. Stay with me.
Yeah.
Just need to know a little bit about your past medical history. Ever been checked out for diabetes or a blood sugar?
I'm of good health. I could say because I go to clinic regular, do my regular checkup, and every time I was in clinic up to last week.
Right, and there's no sugar concerns.
Always up to max.
Okay, so there's no diabetes or no hypertensive concerns. Yes.
No, at all.
Right. Okay, excellent. I'm glad we've been able to rule that out. Now, when it comes to numbness, there are a couple other things that we must double check on, especially when it comes to the fingers and the hands. Yeah. It could be caused by something localized, as in some sort of compression of one of the nerves right within the hand itself, or even higher up. There may also be some other concerns. It may have some sort of infection, some sort of arthritic process. Unfortunately, as we age, that thing called arthritis can also lead to some sort of constriction or compression, and that may cause this uncommon type numbness. We definitely see numbness with diabetes neuropathy and hypertensive neuropathy, but you can also experience that numbness with something like if within the neck, that's where the main nerves are originating. There's something called spondylosis, right? Okay. Spondylosis. So it's a cervical spondylosis. If there is indeed a little bit of that happening, so it's an arthritic process, then that may present with the numbness. And bottom line is, please, just present next time you go to the health center, let them know you're experiencing that, because there is treatment for it. Hope that answers your question.
Okay, doc. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much, sir. Of course, let's check out some WhatsApp. Said, doctor, what are the benefits of saffron?
Right. Now, we just talked a little bit about salt, and I'm glad they brought up saffron, because one of the big ways we can indeed reduce some of that salt in our intake is, of course, by using instead of a flavoring, is adding other herbs. One can be turmeric, and one certainly can be saffron. Now, saffron has these antioxidant properties. What does that mean? It means that the saffron itself, or if you're using it in the grated form, or if you're using it as a salt powder and a powder form, has been shown to be a better addition to the food for flavor. And of course, when it comes to reducing the salt generally, there are other really great health benefits in that the saffron itself, if it's applied to the skin, it can be used as an exfoliant. Most new mummies, when they've just had a baby, and if they are indeed breastfeeding, there's that old wives' tale of adding saffron to the milk. And yes, that has shown benefits in terms of breastfeeding. Then there are other in terms of utilizing the saffron in the foods, and for those especially who have allergies. And I mentioned that it's already proven to be a really good antioxidant. What does that mean? It can actually help reduce your blood pressure. It can actually help reduce the risk of cancer. So there are tons of great health benefits when it comes to saffron. But of course, again, everything in moderation.
Thank you there very much, doctor. Another question here. Hi, doc. Is there any cure for torn meniscus? right? I have been suffering with discomfort in my right knee for years from dancing, and no doctor I go to seems to know how to treat with it. Am I to live with this torn meniscus for the rest of my life?
You know, I'm so sorry that this is what you're experiencing. Yes, unfortunately, when there is indeed a forceful torn meniscus, and that may have happened probably in a really exaggerated twist or may have been a fall even when you were dancing, unfortunately, that can worsen the outcome when it comes to repair of the torn meniscus. Yes, there is relief, but it would involve a lot of invasive therapy, as in directly into the knee structure. It may be direct surgery. There's some persons who even do the meniscal replacement, and later on they may even look at going further in terms of doing knee replacement, not as later on. First and foremost, with a torn meniscus, is of course managing any sort of pain relief. It could be over-the-counter medications. If you're experiencing the swelling at that point in time, you want to use your ice pads, etc., and you want to make sure you're not overly aggravating the knee. Physical therapy is the cornerstone for this, because you want to strengthen the muscles around the knee. You see, around the knee itself, there's several muscles that would help stabilize and support the knee. If those muscles are weakened, then there's an additional pressure on that torn meniscus. Unfortunately, if there isn't a repair in the right time, and when I say repair, that meniscus, they typically go in, they do an arthroscopic type surgery, and they may need to even trim off, they may need to readjust, realign, all those kind of things. If the surgical repair doesn't happen in the right time, then that's when you may unfortunately not have the window of getting the proper repair. Now, research, and there are many innovative therapies. There is a surgery called a meniscal transplant. I'm not an orthopedic, so I can't say what is the success rate or if that's available in Trinidad. I do remember reading about it, but yes, there is other ways of treatment. For you at this point in time, me not having reviewed your leg or seen an x-ray or an ultrasound of the torn meniscus, what I would suggest is, one, manage the symptoms. If you're feeling the pain, make sure the pain doesn't worsen, because the pain can become inflammatory and then lead to arthritis. Two, go see a proper orthopedic specialist. Three, ensure you're engaged in proper physical therapy to get that stabilization of the muscles around the torn meniscus. Hope that answers the question.
All right, Doctor, thank you very much. Your most beloved doctor, the Lunchtime Doctor, right here on the TBC Network. All right, hello, Doc. Can you advise on if and how an adult should use worm medicine?
So I'm not particularly a fan of worm medicine, so I won't really give that advice. You see, that can actually cause more damage to your gut than any sort of benefit. So what I would suggest instead is just stay hydrated. Let your normal foods, as in fruits, fibers, be that quote-unquote purge out. A good dose of healthy fiber will certainly give you the same effect as that worm out.
Then I guess, Doc, that will work for children as well. You know, back in the days, you know, when you're on vacation, your parents will always insist you take a, you know, some worm medicine or a purge for your vacation. Do you recommend something like that as well for the kids?
No, I definitely, and as we are approaching the Easter vacation, let's try to stay away from some of these techniques that really doesn't have enough medical research behind it. If we stay along the lines of good nutrition, we'll get even a better result. We're just ensuring they're eating healthy.
All right, thank you very much for that advice, Doctor. Hello, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Doc. Mm-hmm. Okay, Doctor, if you're on medication for a while, right? Is it necessary to drop it off if you're reading okay? Because I'm on four tablets for the past 3 or 4 years. I did open heart surgery. and I continue taking these tablets every morning, right? And my pressure is reading, okay, 104 over 69, sometimes it's 128 over 73, and the sugar don't cross 130 in the morning. And if I do eat 2 hours after, it could reach about 150, 160. So I want to know if is it necessary to continue these tablets if you're doing the correct thing, like eating correctly and you're on a diet and exercising and things.
Excellent question. Now let's review what you said. You did have open heart surgery, which meant there must have been excessive amount of block or block that would have led to that very serious surgery. You've been doing very well with the management of your medications and your blood and what you're eating, because your blood pressure values and your sugar values are all now within normal values. But here's the thing. When you start to ease off on those medications, the systems you have put into place to bring down or to mitigate the complications of the blood pressure will now not be. So that may mean your blood pressure can elevate. You can now put yourself at further risk of another heart cardiovascular incident or another heart attack. I understand taking 4 tablets can be quite tedious every single day. So here's what I suggest. Note all your values. Make sure the next time, because I'm certain you must have a follow-up appointment, you let your healthcare provider know. They certainly would not remove anyone just like that, but they may start to lower. What we say is stagger the concentration or stagger the volume of it so that it can be gently removed. Some medications need to stay. So you need to just wrap your mind around that you might be on certain medications for the rest of your life. Unfortunately, that comes with the territory of having cardiovascular concerns or a cardiovascular problem, because the worst thing to do, chance, and then another heart attack comes, or worse, a stroke comes, or it affects your eyes, it affects your kidneys, or it affects the legs. A clot can go anywhere in the body. So these medications are necessary to keep all of that systems at bay. Hope that makes sense and hope that answers your question.
Right, so let's get some WhatsApp. Say, hi, Doc. Blessed Easter to you. My pressure was like 146 over 93 underscore 76. You told me to see my doctor, and I did. He gave me meds. It's now 126 over 83-71, and then 122 over 79-67. Then it went to 130 over 81-72. And he says, thank you very much. So I guess those are some good readings.
So excellent readings. Mm-hmm. I'm clapping here for you. And I'm really glad you took the initiative. You went to doctor. You see that 146 or 93? When I was writing it down here, I myself started to palpitate, because anytime I hear values of over 140 or 90, yes, I get a little nervous for my patients. And I consider you all my patients. So anything over 140 or 90, we want to bring it down. 126 on 83, even the 130 on 72, I can accept those. Those are all excellent values. Keep doing what you're doing, but remember, don't sabotage it with bad food and not having a level of exercise. Continue doing these steps and keep us abreast. You're on the way to optimizing your health.
Beautiful. Thank you very much for that update. So let's get a call right now. 627-322-3625-2257. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I am 85 years old. I'm a female, and I just catch cramp in the night in the calves in my 2 feet. Your doctor could help me. Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling in, my dear. And I want you to know that many people at this age also experience that same exact concern, that leg cramp. Here's what you need to do. Let's try to understand what may be that cramp. It may be an involuntary episode where it happens just just like that with the muscles itself. And that's where a little bit of exercise or you just massaging it will certainly help. Massage it for probably about 10 minutes. Now, if you have concerns with diabetes, that's where I'll become a little bit more concerned that you need to get it checked out. Because diabetes can lead to something called a diabetic neuropathy. And that may be that the nerves within the lower legs is becoming affected by the sugar in the body. Or even the same thing can happen with high blood pressure. These cramps in the legs is not only from just normal smooth muscle reactions. It can be from damage to the nerves. So let's see if you have a relative who can take you to a healthcare provider and just make sure we check out all these other things. It may be as simple as just some exercise, or it may be that you need to be treated for either diabetes or high blood pressure. Either which way, we'll get to the bottom of these leg cramps. And I want you to know, in any general day, we see many, many, many patients for these leg cramps, tingling, nerve sensations, especially in the lower limbs. So just let yourself get checked out and we'll get to the bottom of this.
Okay, thank you very much there. We're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor, folks. Let's get another call here. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Just give me your thoughts on some drinks. Water is the best drink, but it's sometimes boring. And I know you don't want to go into soft drinks and heavy sugary drinks like juices and so on. But what are your thoughts on like flavored water or something just not to keep the drink as boring as that now? So what are your thoughts?
Okay.
Thank you.
So let's add some zest to the water. That's what you're saying. No problem. Yes, I actually love the cran water, and I always make sure I check the sugar component. So once it's under the normal requirement, then that's fine. So cran water, sure. Here's how you can flavor up your water. Add a couple drops of lime juice, lemon juice to the water. You can even, if you have watermelon, here's what I do actually. I cube the watermelon and put it in my ice and make a ice cubed watermelon, right? And then I add that to the ice cubes of the watermelon to my normal water every day. So it's a watermelon type flavored water, and it's very small amounts. So yes, there's several ways you can zest up your water. You can do the same thing using pineapple, using any fruit you want. And in that way, it's a measured amount. Hope that answers your question.
All right, let's get some questions here via WhatsApp. Hi, Doc, my two ankles are swollen. What should I do? I went to the doctor. There seems to be no problem, and I don't know if it's my weight. I'm 165 pounds.
Okay, so anytime we're seeing swelling on the ankles, that is indeed a problem. That means there's a fluid overload, or there isn't enough proper circulation in the body, and the fluid or the circulation there is pooling at the ankles. Yes, the weight can be a contributory factor, but we want to make sure we check the heart in particular. We want to see if there's any blockage anywhere, and we want to also ensure that your blood pressures are normalized. Believe me, once you check these particular things, the ABCs we talk about, your glycosylated HbA1c, B, your blood pressure, and C, your cholesterol, get those three under control and you will see a relief with the swelling at the ankles. What you can do from today, one, reduce your salt component. Two, at the end of the evening, just elevate the legs and you will certainly see some changes as well. Hope that answers the question.
All right, thank you, Doc. And I'm sure a lot of people listening, they will say what she said. The person said they went to the doctor and they said there was no problem.
Oh, I did not hear that particular factor.
Yeah, they went to the doctor and there seems to be no problem.
Right. I'm very much concerned. There's no way the legs would have that edema or swelling at the ankles if there's no problem. Mm-hmm. It's definitely some sort of pathology. So I suggest you can either take about a month from now, engage in some sort of exercise, watch what you're eating, reduce the salt component, and then check back again in about a month. Here's water can also be the concern. Sometimes one may be in a pre-diabetic or pre-hypertensive state. So the values will all read normal, but the body is hitting a level of something is going out of whack, and there are symptoms that are showing. So while these symptoms are there, let's try not to ignore it. So let's try to at least engage in some level of exercise, reduce that salt component, and about a month time, if you're still seeing that swelling around the ankles, then certainly either get a second opinion or you can revisit that same particular doctor.
All right, thank you. Let's get a call here. Just about 7 more minutes to lunchtime, doctor. Hello, good afternoon.
Good morning, Doc, and good morning to Base Trinity here.
Yeah, man, Trinity.
I just want to ask you a question. Eating and drinking, is it the right thing to do? That's one, right? And the other question is, something I was going to ask, I just forget this. Yeah, anyway, I'll go back and I remember that I'll ask you, right? So I wonder if eating and drinking while, drinking while having your meal, if it is a good thing, if that is okay, or if it's unhealthy or bad eating practice, I don't drink, a bad practice, I don't know. So let me know what you know that.
So this has been a debate all across the world, actually. And there's no consistent medical research to support the fact that there's anything unhealthy about eating and drinking together. Okay, so let's debunk that myth. However, what it is suggested is that before you have a meal, you can just have some warm water or lukewarm tap water, temperature water. What that does, it layers or it coats the stomach lining and, of course, activates the gut activity to prepare the body for food. Of what is not recommended is, of course, if you're diabetic and you're then having an excessive amount of a sugary drink with your meal, because what that will do is it will shoot your sugar values through the roof. So you'll have like a surge of your blood glucose, and that is not recommended. So it really depends on what the situation is. But if you are having water with your meals, then nothing is wrong with that. If, however, you are out and probably socializing and having a beer or two, then of course everything in moderation, especially when it comes to drinking alcohol. We always suggest have the meal first and then have a little bit of that alcohol, because you don't want your blood alcohol levels to now become intoxicated. Hope that answers your question.
Okay, Doc, let's get a question here. Good day, Sherwin Ali from the San Fernando General Hospital. Thank you, Sherwin. Hi, does only fat people have bad back posture?
Absolutely not. Just about any person that has either sitting too long at a desk or sitting on a bad chair or doesn't have their computers at the right level can have bad posture. So it can be persons of a lower BMI can also have bad posture. It has nothing to do with weight. It has more to do with, of course, the way you engage either with the table or how you sit, or even say in a car when you're driving. All of that can lead to bad posture.
Right, let's get another one here. I have a pacemaker. Can I take a purge?
No, let's not go there at all. Anyone that has a cardiovascular insertion or device, let's stick to what's recommended by your healthcare professional. Let's tell you what a purge will do to the body. The purge may drop your blood volume quicker than you want it to happen. That may then directly affect the circulatory functioning of the heart. We don't want to complicate matters when we have a pacemaker. So let's stick to the advice that your healthcare professional gives you.
Hi, Doc. You care to share with us what we can look forward to in tomorrow's Help Plus?
Definitely. So tomorrow, join us on CNC3, just about 7:30, 7:40 on your morning brew, where myself and Jason will be talking about our Health Plus in the Guardian. Yesterday was Autism Awareness Day, so we're going to talk a little bit to parents exactly what is autism. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the myths and, of course, how you as parents can detect any sort of learning disabilities with your children. Yes, this is a conversation we possibly should have had even before SEA. That's okay. We continue to have it because, of course, the alignment of the Awareness Month. What is important is knowing what milestones, and, of course, that if you pick up something, trust your gut and get it checked out, because early intervention, just like with a cancer, early intervention, early treatment may lead to a better quality of life. Yesterday, in our Guardian, in the Sunday paper, I even talked a little bit about when we picked up the diagnosis for my son. He is indeed one of those on what we say the autistic spectrum, and how his early intervention played a very important role in him being able to manage some of these constraints and challenges that our autistics go through. So that's in your Guardian tomorrow. We're going to talk more about it right here on The Lunchtime Doctor.
Beautiful. Nice and wise. We do have about 2 more minutes. Somebody reminded here that you did not answer the question. Can you explain cherry angioma? Will it cause cancer?
Right. So that's very correct. I did not explain the cherry angioma. So here's what, first and foremost, this cherry angioma is. It's not very common. Can it cause cancer? It really depends on, first and foremost, how it progresses. It's not typically malignant, but if it does present with over a course of time and you're seeing it repeatedly, then we need to biopsy for cancer. This cherry angioma is also called a hemangioma. It is almost like a red patch on the skin. So literally as it is, cherry colored, red colored, and it's a growth. That's what an angioma is. It's not commonly cancerous. However, anything in the body that's an extra growth can become cancerous. So you want to monitor it. If it's developing rapidly, if it's growing in size more than usual, because some persons have the hemangioma or the cherry on the skin and it doesn't even increase in size, then that one is not something that I'd be worried about. Thank you so much for reminding me about that.
Thank you very much, Doctor, once again. So we catch you tomorrow. Do enjoy the rest of your day.
And everyone who tuned in, be safe. Thank you so much, Base. All the best.
All right. Thank you. Once again, folks, you've been listening to The Lunchtime Doctor, heard right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangit 106.1, Sky 99.5, and Vibe City 105 FM. We'll join you tomorrow, once again, at 12 noon to 1 p.m. for another edition of The Lunchtime Doctor. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.